Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Welcome back, folks, to our continuing coverage of the terrorist attack made on our city just yesterday morning at 3:15 a.m. We learned today, as a result of a press conference, Governor Landry, Christopher Wray, the deputy director of the FBI in charge of the counterterrorism unit, the special agent in charge, Joshua Jackson of ATF, as well as Mayor Cantrell, 14 individuals killed plus the shooter, 35 injured. They're saying that this individual was a lone attacker and was 100% inspired by ISIS. And it seems as though this transformation relative to the radicalization of this individual occurred sometime before the summer. There were two IEDs recovered that were fully functional. They were placed in two different locations by this individual. And there was a lot of information that was provided today that was cleared up. There has not been a lot of discussion and not a lot of context around the thoughts of the law enforcement officers that were on Bourbon Street. And what we know is that three officers ran to this individual, and there was a firefight that broke out right there on Bourbon Street, and they were able to eliminate this individual yesterday evening and yesterday morning. And joining us is Eric Hessler, the attorney for Pano. Eric, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Noel. How are you?
So, Eric, first let's start off. Two of the three officers were shot. Do we have any update as to their status?
I believe at this point they've both been released. Thank goodness their wounds were, moderate and not very severe, thank goodness. But I'm understanding that one was released yesterday afternoon and the other one maybe in the evening time.
And three officers obviously engaged in this firefight with this individual. Any context or backdrop that you could provide as it relates to that happenstance?
Well, the interesting thing is, because of the contingency on Bourbon, these officers really didn't all necessarily work together. They were from different districts, but they were put together on the same squad. But they worked as a team, and they completed the task that presented itself at that time. At the time that it occurred, they were just simply on their routine patrol near their post, and they were actually going to attend to a call that another police officer asked. And as they were walking there, this is when this incident virtually occurred to right in front of their faces.
Yeah. We've seen video of many other officers on other street corners running to the danger as well. I was just kind of curious from y'all's perspective. There really hasn't been a lot of discussion about this. You know, in most recent history, law enforcement has taken it on the chin quite a bit, and we seem to forget that when they're running to the danger, they're putting themselves at risk and their lives at risk.
Well, there's no doubt about that, and that happened. I mean, I don't have to tell you that. You were back in the day when we both could run. We were running with our buddies toward that too, while everybody was running away. And sometimes you're like, maybe it's best if I follow the crowd. But you know, these officers, they did that prior to the career of the profession of policing becoming so questionable by some segments of society. They did it throughout. You know, Rodney King, they did it throughout George Floyd, and they're doing it now. And it's just, it might be more underappreciated now, but police officers never stopped doing police work. The good ones. The good ones never stopped doing police work. And that's part of it. That's part of what a good policeman does.
When you think about how quickly they were able to incapacitate this individual, obviously he was armed with a lot of firepower. It's almost chilling to think about, you know, what could have happened had he not been incapacitated.
Well, and that's goes to, you know, the great credit of these officers, because this guy was prepared for confrontation. Obviously, his plan didn't go as he planned it, or else those bombs would have probably been detonated, and more casualties and injuries would have occurred. And thank God they, you know, whether it be bad luck or the intervention of these officers or a combination of the two or three, it would have been a heck of a lot worse. And they did; they acted quickly, and they defeated that threat.
Eric, have you been able to talk to any of the officers that were actually on Bourbon Street at that time?
Yeah, I was there all day yesterday.
I was kind of curious. This was an electric vehicle, and this is not about electric vehicles. Other than that, you can accelerate in an electric vehicle, and it doesn't make much noise at all. You know, a lot of times you hear things before you see things. And I was kind of curious if there was any reaction by the officers to that issue.
I'll be quite honest with you. I didn't know, despite my numerous conversations with them, that was just never brought up. I didn't know it was actually an electric vehicle until I was told early this morning. I had no reason. There was nothing that sparked the conversation toward that. I think they couldn't see the vehicle. They heard the impact, but it was because, you know, some of their view was obstructed. And, you know, obviously the impact, and they saw what was occurring and they reacted to that. So there wasn't a mention of hearing the vehicle roaring down the street, so to speak. But they didn't see it until that last, right at the moment of impact.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. I mean, you've been in those situations. You kind of hear the vehicle before you actually see it, right, or recognize that it's coming at you.
Right, right. And that, you know, Bourbon Street's pretty confined, you know, so you would it amplifies, the buildings amplify the sound of vehicles and sounds of almost everything. That was just not ever mentioned, any loud noises or anything that indicated to them by any kind of audible sense that there was something amiss.
Obviously, the aftermath of this event, a horrific crime scene of the nature that most law enforcement people don't witness, right?
No, yes, it was obviously a very extended scene, a lot of trauma, unfortunately, a lot of fatalities, and fatalities that were great majority, caused by high-speed impact, which is not a very pretty thing to have to see. And I don't know if you remember, many people probably have forgotten, in 1995, in March of 95, there was a, mm-hmm. it certainly wasn't anything on the level of a terrorist attack, but there was an impaired driver on St. Patrick's Day night. I was my second week as a sergeant on Bourbon Street. And this driver, driving like a beer truck or something, he was impaired, and he accidentally turned onto Bourbon Street, and there were like 35 people wounded, one fatality. And it was just a mess. I mean, it was a horrible thing to witness. It was a horrible thing to see so many injured and wounded. So yeah, that was not anything that it's not the normal experience. Thankfully, so.
From the policing perspective, obviously, there's going to be folks have to look at themselves in the mirror critically in the aftermath of this. Every time there's an after action to this type of an event, it really begs of folks to look at operationally with the, discerning eye. Your thoughts about that and the challenges of policing not only the French Quarter, but more importantly, Bourbon Street?
Well, I mean, there's going to have to be an after-action report. There's going to have some questions answered. How to do it better. How to make sure that the security devices that are designed to prevent that are actually working and utilized properly, and if not, that any other, I guess, temporary barrier is just that, a barrier, not something somebody can go around. But with that being said, these officers on the street, they're not part of that plan. They're just a tool to carry it out. They do as they're told. They work the plan, and they did their jobs, no doubt about it. And so
right.
I'll leave the after action stuff for the people that really make those decisions, and that's way above the level of police officers.
You raise an interesting thing because I believe that there is a certain level of importance that actually, folks at that level need to be involved in it, especially those that are working it repetitively over and over and over again, because they see things and hear things that most people that are actually removed from being down there, right?
Oh, no, I agree, and most good leaders will obviously that'd be very irresponsible not to consider, the boots on the street perspective and will this work? Is there a better way? Can we do it a little differently? And if you don't, I guess you don't respect that, or you turn a deaf ear to that, you're going to have some, a plan that might have some holes in it. But I don't think that was this. I mean, you had the FBI involved in the planning of this operation. You had Homeland Security. But again, I'll leave that for those fellas and ladies to answer. But the boots on the ground, the troopers, the wildlife and fisheries agents, the NOPD, sheriff's departments, and everybody else, they carried off their duties, as they always do.
Eric, earlier in my monologue, I said that, let's put things in proper context. No matter what security measures are deployed or otherwise, whatever the operational plan may or may not be, it's really all about minimizing risk, because you can't eliminate all risk, right? And these folks that have evil in their heart and evil in their mind, they want to exploit whatever weakness that there may be. A lot of them do some advanced work in looking at things. You can't be in all places at all times. And it's important, I think, for folks to put that in context, right?
No doubt. As you know, even the best plan, it's going to have some openings. It's going to have somebody that might be able to figure out, well, this is how we get it done. There are people criticizing this plan. I understand that, but I can assure you that the offender's plan, the terrorist plan, didn't work out as he anticipated. Because if he did, those IEDs would have been placed, they would have been exploded, and he would have done whatever else it was he was going to do to finish it off. That was thwarted. Was it thwarted because he couldn't get into the quarter in time, and because of the high level of security, and he was afraid of being detected? I don't know. Hopefully the investigation will show that. But you can't plan for everything, but you can certainly plan for the obvious. You can anticipate for other things. And you got to be a little creative sometimes because, you know, you can't have a barrier that can be driven around because it's not much of a barrier. At the same time, you got to let pedestrians go. But you know, you'll just at that point you'll just have pedestrians walking in with backpacks, and then so it's really as you can prevent as much as you can prevent. You prepare as much as you can prepare. You do your job, and hopefully you're gonna scare away the bad guys where they're gonna hit a softer target.
Yeah, and we know that this is a risk because we've had experiences in parades, as you pointed out, with the St. Patrick's Day event on Bourbon Street, this event on Bourbon Street. We've had other events on Bourbon
Street.
Right,
Endymion. We had Endymion just on regular
street. Yeah, with vehicular vehicles to figure out a place where to put these bollards that are removable for the street and permanent on the sidewalk so that, you know, you're not able to get down the sidewalks. I mean, it's not rocket science. Whatever the security measures that are put in place, and what I've said is really a lot of folks are texting in and saying, you know, you're talking too much about the bollards. It's really not about the bollards. It's about the execution, right? So if you put a security measure in place, you got to make sure it's actually working because
right.
You as officers on the street are aware of these security measures in place, and you know, and you because of that awareness, you're anticipating that there's going to be an impediment there, right?
Right. Yeah. You rely on the plan to a great degree, but yeah. It's kind of like, you know, Mike Tyson's famous saying: "Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth."
Right.
And,
well,
and
yeah.
Certainly a plan to keep that the vehicles off of Bourbon, and. When it failed,
to minimize that threat,
of course. But when it failed, the officers didn't turn around and go home. They ran up to the car,
yeah,
pulled out
absolutely.
Their guns, and did what they were trained to do under that circumstance.
Obviously, for the benefit of the listening audience, Eric, I mean, I know that the men and women of the NOPD, they got to put their uniform and show up this morning, show up this evening, tomorrow morning, same thing. We're headed into a busy time, and we have one of the largest events in the history of the United States heading here in February. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't think anybody is going to forget that's occurring, and these officers are among them. I can tell you, you know, yesterday morning when I was over there doing, you know, helping out these officers, they were told that, you know, they were just ending a 12-hour shift, and they were told, hey, You're going back out in 10 minutes, and you're going to sweep the quarter. And there was no moaning, grumbling, complaining. These guys knew it. And these guys and girls knew what they had to do. But you know, it does wear on you. And in the next several months, especially in light of just what occurred yesterday, the next several months is going to be you know, a long road. They'll travel it. They'll do well. But It's gonna take its toll, just that it always does on even the best days.
Yeah, absolutely. Please tell the officers that they are in our minds and our thoughts, and we wish the best and a speedy recovery for them. And I tell you, everyone that I've talked to is so thankful for what they have done, and everyone's kind of, you know, engaged in that conjecture: what could have been had they not incapacitated this individual.
Cool.
In the
yeah.
incredibly fast way that they did, which was obviously absolutely necessary, and we thank them for their bravery.
The city should be very proud of all these officers that were working that night, and especially the ones that intervened.
No doubt. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric Hessler, attorney for the Policemen's Association of New Orleans State, of course. Thank you, sir, and Happy New
Year. Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk End.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Text line, stay with us. Folks, last week, prior to the big events this week, I spoke to several folks with several French Quarter organizations as we were getting ready to celebrate all of this. Obviously, no one ever thought that we would be talking about this happenstance, this tragic event that occurred yesterday. But, you know, it's important to check in with our folks there because the French Quarter is very unique. It's commercial. It's residential. You have a population that lives there, stays there each and every day. You have a very transient population that visits there every day. And there are different perspectives about everything that goes on within the French Quarter, the confines of the French Quarter. Joining us today is a good friend, known him for years, Glade Bilby, president of the French Quarter Citizens Group. Glade, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell. Thank you.
The French Quarter is always seems to be the primary focus for a whole host of reasons. We never wanted it to be yesterday's reason, right?
Right. No, this was a gut punch to us in the Quarter, especially all of us that care, that pay attention, that are committed to making it better for the residents and the visitors. So, yeah, tough day.
We're learning a lot about the victims, Glade, a lot of local folks that, you know, we always get very, very excited about them going back to the Quarter, enjoying the Quarter. You know, the Quarter is for us first and everyone else second, in my view. Our heart goes out to all of the victims.
Yeah, I think when I am seeing the list, they're starting to come up with a list of the names of people that have been killed the other day. And it's terrible because it's a lot of young folks, which is distressing to us. You know, I've had people call from all around the country and text me and say, I know you weren't out at 3 o'clock in the morning, but are you okay? It's that kind of thing. And it's tough to see this for anything, even when we have, God forbid, shootings, which happens more frequently than this event. But the Quarter is a flexible place. It's fluid. Things are happening. You know, people forget, Newell, that this is a neighborhood. It's America's most historic neighborhood. We live here. We have people that are here 365 that take care of this place. You know, 19 million tourists, they come and they go. That's over 1.5 million a month in front of my house, let's just say. It's not quite like that, but there's a lot of people that come through here for fun and forget that people live here.
And you guys, you know, y'all are involved and at the forefront of stimulating conversation about quality of life issues there. And obviously one of those quality of life issues is security and security measures. Because even though that there's a big event in town, it doesn't mean that the guys, you know, the folks that are living in the French Quarter, that they're not out and about moving around with everyone else, right?
This is true, and I'm a commissioner on French Quarter Management District, and most people know that for the Quarter for the Quarter and the blue light patrols that have been very effective in augmenting what the NOPD has been able to do. I think without this supplemental police patrol, we wouldn't quite have the presence and the safety and the security that we have now. And we've done a lot of other things at French Quarter Management District as well. And you are right. Most of our organizations are focused on quality of life issues, which involve mostly security and safety, whether it's sidewalks, lighting, streets, cleanliness. All of that goes together to make a better environment for people that live here and visit.
One of the things that I've talked about, and folks get a little bit too down into the details, and I'm thinking about things in a bigger sense, is that no matter what you decide to do there, you have to execute. You have to make sure that it works. You and I have had this conversation about street lighting in the French Quarter. I've been on radio 7 years. I think, Glade, you were one of my first guests. I mean, we talked about it then. It hasn't changed. It's still an issue. We're still having trouble with the execution.
It is still an issue, and it seems so obvious to fix the lights that it's taken 3 years for us to get to a cooperative endeavor agreement with the efforts of the French Quarter Management District and the city to put a $1.7 million contract together to repair the lights. Now, you need to build something great, but you need to maintain it better. And that's what I think is something that we need to do. The execution, as you say, is important. We're famous for let's build something, but then never take care of it. And I think that's the situation that we get ourselves in the execution.
One of the reasons I bring it up is because it's emblematic of prioritization, right? I mean, one would think that a $1.7 million contract, I think the other day we gave away either $5 or $7 million to a bunch of not-for-profit organizations on a snap of a finger, that we should be able to get that done in a much quicker fashion.
Well, I think so, too. And I know what I was kind of blindsided by. You see them putting $2.1 million into a food truck area underneath the interstate near on Earhart. And that's sort of short-lived. I mean, if it's going to be for something that will be a little more permanent, put it where people can park and where people get to. That under the interstate, just because it doesn't look good now, doesn't mean after the Super Bowl it'll be functional and be effective. So I think the money could be used better in other places, as one example.
Yeah, well, I was kind of curious about that destination.
I think all of us were too.
I don't know that there are a lot of people saying, that's where I want to go dine.
Right. And think about it, it's for 8 food trucks, $2.1 million for 8 food trucks. And I see 2 there on a regular basis because I use that Home Depot. But it doesn't quite make sense. And I think we need a little bit more effort in certainly the execution, but that comes with some common sense built into it. I know you talked to ad infinitum about the bollards. We could talk streetlights. We could talk sanitation. You can go into any of these issues. But they need to be executed properly on a long-term basis because we're here 365 days a year in the quarter, and we attract people all year round.
Well, I bring it up, and I did so reluctantly, to be quite honest with you. And I know that you would appreciate this because you know me very well. I hear a lot of the talking heads saying what we're going to do in the aftermath of this event and what needs to be done. The adoption of certain things is great, but if you don't and you're not involved in the execution day in and day out and making sure that if there's equipment that's placed, that it's functional, it's working, it's doing what it's designed to do, 365, 24/7, it's of no value. And that's a wasted conversation, quite frankly.
And money and effort. And I think we just can't hide in the traditional fatalism we have about government. We have to make responsible people responsible and have them do a better job all the way around. I mean, you can pick any given topic connected to the French Quarter. It's important. Why? Because we're the economic engine of this city, and people don't see that. And as residents, we live here. We're the stewards of the architecture, if you will. You know, and my house has been here almost 200 years. And it's going to outlast me for sure, outlast all of us for sure. But you want it to be the attraction. You want that and the history to be something that people come and see, not just big-ass beers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to add drama to this, but if we want to really do something in memory of those who lost their lives and the sacrifices that are made by law enforcement that are working inside of the quarter, it would be, let's be mindful and pay attention to the execution of whatever remedial measures, security measures, lighting measures, whatever we do there, because we know that it is a huge soft target, and we know that there's a lot of risk there. We want to just go about minimizing that risk. But let's do it. Let's make sure that we remind ourselves of how many lives have been lost in the French Quarter over the years, right?
Yeah,
because of negligence, intentional acts or otherwise, some of which could have been averted.
Right. I mean, let's just take, for instance, the sidewalks. They've been in deplorable shape. I've had two friends break a hip, one fracture an ankle, just walking on our sidewalks. So come on, let's do a better job, and then I think people will enjoy coming back here. Right now, people want, it's a one-time place. You come, you experience it, and you leave. Do you really want to come back? Not a lot. And that's borne out by some of the statistics, unfortunately, that a small percentage of people want to come back after they visited one time. And that's a shame. We want people to keep coming back, because they've learned something, they've experienced something, and it's been a good experience.
You know, the French Quarter, even though it's a residential area, obviously, it's kind of synonymous to Disneyland, right? Disney World. It is, because it's an attraction, right? It's a destination.
Right.
People come.
Right.
There's a lot of curiosity about it. If you were managing a business that actually owned it, you'd want to be at 100% 365, 24/7, I would think.
Yeah, I would too. And that's the function of government administration. And I don't know that people realize the actual economic impact that the French Quarter has, certainly on the city and the state and this entire region. Look at the landings and departures at the airport. Look at all of the stuff that is sold in the French Quarter. It comes from somewhere else. The workers, we supply a lot of jobs to people that don't live here. You know, they come in to work here. And I have to say something about business. I mean, I've talked to a number of people. They need people to come back in the quarter. Look at the tax revenue that was lost by having it shut down yesterday and most of the day today. That's going to affect all these businesses, and in a bad way, because these were big days for sales, big days for restaurants, big days for all the shopkeepers who pay pretty high rents to live in the French Quarter. So I think we need people to come back. I talked to somebody this one's interesting. They have a business in the main part of the quarter. This is the first year that they've gotten terrorism insurance. And the agent told her, said, "You're the only person in our portfolio that has terrorism insurance. And this is what it's for." This is exactly what it's for, unfortunately. So to hear that, it took a new spin for me, because I didn't really think of it in terms of that. We've never been a terrorist place. We've had dangers and issues, but not a terrorism destination. And that changes the whole complexity of things.
There's no doubt. But any time you have a city that, as New Orleans and Company has labeled it, built to host, and we host some of the biggest events, not only in this country, in the world, you know, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And you know, and I know, you know, this conversation has been focused on the French Quarter, but this could have happened anywhere in this city, right? And it could happen in any city, in any state, not only in this country, but around the world, and it has. And I remind folks about this minimization of risk. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Someone with evil in their heart and their mind that want to carry out some convoluted plan to wreak havoc on society.
In the name of religion, which is a weird thing to say to me, but I think maybe we're lucky. I looked at some of the videos of the law enforcement running to the situation. It was like, wow, these guys are great. And we've been working hard in the quarter. We're doing a good job coordinating the state police with NOPD in the 8th District and the sheriff's office. I've never seen such great cooperation. Actually, Newell, the stats, the numbers are down, the thefts are down, the crime is down, the auto break-ins are down. We're doing a really good job here. So it's unfortunate this happened with this focus at this time, because I think things were trending really well for us in the quarter, for sure.
But that's a very important message, and I'm glad that you brought it up, Glade, as a resident there, because you live it and you see it every day. And even as tough as it is in the French Quarter, you know what fits and doesn't fit. There's very little that doesn't fit in the French Quarter, quite frankly.
Right.
But the reality is that the folks that live there, they know it better than anyone, and you act on your gut, and you react, you know, to your gut feeling about certain things there. But it's encouraging to hear when you say that it was all moving in a very positive direction, and that's the message that I think we need to talk about more, right?
It is. I can't say enough. NOPD has done a great job with the French Quarter Task Force and the Blue Light Patrol, Supplemental Police Patrol, the response time is under 2 minutes, which is unheard of in this whole city, to have that happen. So that's been great. The car break-ins, that's down. Since we started a program and put signs up in the parking lots about remove, lock, take your stuff, auto thefts have gone, auto break-ins have gone down 72%. So when you look at the statistics, we were rolling really well down here. So it's a shame the focus changed now to this, and we're going to throw out the bollard idea, which, hey, you could have driven a car in the crowd on Poydras Street going to the Dome on any given day and done far more damage.
Sure, you know?
No doubt.
I think I mean that's why I made the reference that, you know, the reason I talked about it, although reluctantly, it's because it's emblematic of a bigger thing. Once you decide that you're going to give a piece of geography heightened importance and more security measures, and that it's important that we focus on execution, and you know, because that's a cultural thing. Able to execute and you know, I know a lot of the issues, not to beat a dead horse that we've already talked about, it goes right back to that. We can talk about doing all these things, but a year and a half to get a $1.7 million contract consummated and as it relates to street lighting, that ought to be second nature.
And try to finish it in 2 months. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Glade, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you guys. I hope the quarter bounces back. It's going to open today at 2:30.
It's going to be
Bourbon Street, and you know, I for one, I told my wife this morning, we're going to go at some point this weekend.
Yeah, it we're committed. It's going to be better than ever.
Absolutely. Glade Bilby with the French Quarter Citizens Group, president of SAME. I appreciate your time. Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, as always, Newell. I appreciate talking with you.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, we covered a lot of territory today. We tried to talk about, I think some details that are really important moving forward. Some may say that this was too soon, others saying not soon enough. There's never any really right time. Joining us is Dave Cohen, our WWL news director. Dave, I was just kind of curious. I know you've kind of been watching, you know, what's being said on national news, local news, and otherwise. What is the dialogue that's going on at the present time?
You know, I've been doing what we call two ways or live hits with radio stations all over the country, from New York to San Francisco, L.A., Houston, Dallas. And, you know, there is definitely a sense of shock and fear that I'm hearing from all over the country, that people feel like this terror attack in New Orleans was an attack on the United States of America, was an attack, obviously not to the scale or the magnitude of the 9/11 attack.
Right.
But there haven't been terror attacks since then. There haven't been people who pledged allegiance to the Islamic State who have successfully pulled off massive mass casualty, mass murder attacks in the United States. And, you know, we've been hearing since 9/11, now nearly a quarter of a century ago, that New Orleans was a target. The terrorists would seek to attack New Orleans, whether it was during Mardi Gras, a Super Bowl, New Year's Eve, or some other time. And the fact that it actually happened now really has shocked people all over the country.
And we've been really immune, because even during the, you know, the Summer of Love riots and stuff, we really didn't have that much activity here. It's been weird. And people have asked me around the country, Newell, what do you attribute that to? And I said, well, you know, we have Mardi Gras together. We do fairs and festivals for every living creature that ever walked the face of the earth. We're partying together all the time.
Yeah.
I said, we just don't have that sense of, I don't know, if that friction, so to speak, right?
No, even though this is a city that is known more than its fair share of violence for literally more than 300 years, even though we've seen irresponsible and even criminally irresponsible behavior in the city, drunk driving leading to mass casualties. It's never been where it's this kind of someone who is just filled with so much hate. You know, people have pointed out, if you go back far enough, the rooftop shooter, Howard Johnson.
Yeah, Howard Johnson.
The Howard Johnson.
Mark Essex. Yeah.
That's the closest thing they could think of in terms of the emotion that this has drawn locally. But, no, New Orleans has, you're right. I mean, during the Civil Rights era, of course, there were protests and movements. And during the Vietnam War, I mean, if you go back through history, there have been some protests here in New Orleans. But New Orleans largely has not been a city that we see anger and hate espoused. We disagree. We have conversations. Of course, the crime is another discussion. But this seems so out of character for New Orleans. And I think it really did shock a lot of people's senses.
And this is touching so many folks. I just was reading an email, touched Odyssey. We have a fellow employee who doesn't live here, but lives in one of our other representative cities that tragically lost their life.
And, you know, the outpouring of concern that we've seen from people all over the country, you know, are you okay? Is everyone there okay? How, you know, is your family okay? I mean, that is heartwarming. And we always see during tragedy, the best in people come after we see the worst in people. And while to some extent we wish we could see that best in people all the time, at least it is great to know that when the worst happens, it does in most people bring out the best in them. And it brings people together. And we're seeing blood drives. We're seeing funds established for victims and survivors' families, and we're seeing all of these great things come out of this.
And by the way, before we sign off, I just wanted to thank you. Incredible job done yesterday, yourself, Ian Hoke, and others. A lot of us were out of town, and you guys covered it all day long, and we appreciate that. Job well done.
Well, thank you. And you know, in times of need, that's when we need to be here the most. We hate that we have to do it, but we're glad that we can for the community.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, Noel, we'll continue to talk about the tragedy, and I guess talking about it is really a great way of trying to cope with what happened. It's cathartic to discuss it. We'll talk about the victims and maybe what could have been done to prevent this from happening. A lot of questions still need to be answered. So just a sad, sad, tragic beginning, but I have confidence and faith that we will overcome it all.
No doubt, my friend, and Happy New Year to you. Scoot's up next. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll visit with you guys again in the morning. Have a great Thursday evening.